we get to today's episode, I just wanted to remind everybody about the upcoming Phoenix Fan Fusion Convention, formerly Phoenix Comic Con. It runs 4 days from May 23rd through May 26th, and there are tons of great guests. Just listen to some of the names. Jeff Goldblum, one of my favorite actors of all time, The Fly, Thor Ragnarok, Jurassic Park. We also have Nicolaj Coster-Waldau from Game of Thrones, Ray Park, who played Darth Maul, Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Ranger, Robin Lord Taylor, who is the Penguin on Gotham. We have Adam Savage from Mythbusters, Paul Rubens, Mr. Pee-wee Herman himself, from the world of Star Trek, George Takei, Nichelle Nichols, Walter Koenig, and Garrett Wong. Frodo is going to be there, actor Elijah Wood, from the Harry Potter movies, Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom, Summer Glau from Firefly, and finally Billy Dee Williams, I'll mention, from Star Wars, has a big role in the upcoming Star Wars movie, Episode 9, that's out this Christmas. So again, tons of media guests available for autographs and photo opportunities, and I think it's a really great lineup they have this year. From the world of comics, they have some real legends there. Jerry Conway, Dennis Cowan, Roy Thomas, Kevin Eastman from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, super talented artist Michael Golden, Joe Staton, Neil Adams, Christopher Priest, a very prolific writer, is going to be there, Howard Chaykin, Denny O'Neill, who pretty much ran the Batman books from the late 80s all the way up through the 90s and into the 2000s, also legendary artist Kevin Nolan. There's also going to be creators like David Marquez, who most of you will remember from his work on Ultimate Spider-Man, Derek Robertson, who co-created The Boys with Garth Ennis. There's an upcoming Amazon show focused on that property. We have Greg Land, Ty Templeton, Tony Parker, Larry Stroman, along with tons of other artists and creators that are going to be there. So it's one of those shows that don't forget where their roots are from. There's tons of great comic creators, writers, and they have a great artist alley and a lot of local creators there as well. So I do recommend this show. It's one of those shows I think everybody should do. The tone and the feel of the show is unique and something all its own. Tons of cosplayers, a lot of Doctor Who, a lot of Star Wars. So whatever your particular fandom is, you'll probably find something of interest at Phoenix Fan Fusion. Tickets have been rolled back in terms of cost to the 2017 prices. It's only $85 for all 4 days. They raised them last year to cover a lot of the security that's in place. And I think all that's still going to be in place, but they listened to the fans and they heard that, yeah, the prices were a little bit too high. So they're certainly competitive when you compare them to the 4 day cost of a lot of other shows, or the per day cost, I should say. And there's tons of events, tons of stuff going on. They close the streets next to the convention center. There's food trucks out there, lots of covered seating where you can sit in the misters and eat some good food and just hang out and have a really great time. It's going to be fun. As I said, I do recommend everybody getting out to Phoenix Fan Fusion. I'll be there covering it for the Comic Source and LRM Online, and I hope to see you there. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 828 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is your Valiant Sunday episode, and today we're continuing the Valiant chronology by looking at the second issue of the Bloodshot series, the 2012 series from writer Dwayne Swarczynski. We have art by Manuel Garcia with Arturo Lozzi. Inks are by Matt Ryan. Colors are by Ian Hannon, and letters are by Rob Steen. I covered the first issue a couple of weeks ago, and Jesse's joining me to talk about issue 2. And since you didn't get a chance to join me for the first issue, Jesse, I want to ask you, do you remember reading that first issue, and what was your reaction when you got the first issue of the new Bloodshot from this current iteration of Valiant?
I was stoked. Growing up in the late 80s and early 90s, but specifically the early 90s, and reading the original stuff, I was fired up. I mean, it was a huge part of my high school experience. And then, of course, you know, video games and Star Wars re-release and college and life came along, and I kind of drifted away. And Valiant faded away too. And then, of course, Valiant came back 2012, and oh, look at this, you know, Exo Manowar, Harbinger, and Bloodshot, first three titles right out the gate. And so I was all about it. And I got in there and I said, you know what, this is really, really good. I didn't really like Bloodshot as much as I liked what I was seeing in Harbinger and XO, because Harbinger and XO were, you know, just amazing. But Bloodshot, it wasn't terrible. It was just it was very bloody. It was very interesting. It was a new take on the character. And so, you know, I read each issue without missing a beat. But, you know, I really didn't really jump into the character and probably until a few more issues down the road when towards the Harbinger War saga. Then I was really kind of really digging the character a lot more once they had built him up a little bit and kind of there's a little bit to that. And then, of course, later on when we start seeing him in Bloodshot Reborn and after the Valiant and all that, then he just became, you know, one of the top three characters in the Valiant universe. But understand that we start somewhere. This wasn't bad. It was interesting, and I was very excited.
Yeah, I was so excited too. I just remember reading that first issue and being stuck. So I'm not surprised you had kind of a similar reaction to me. So, well, let's go through issue two, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it. If you remember last time, we got introduced to Bloodshot, and if you listened to the last episode, Jesse was talking about how this Bloodshot Rising Spirit isn't so different from this early 2012 or mid 2012 series, which is kind of interesting because we've been giving Bloodshot Rising Spirit kind of a hard time as a title, and this one is much more beloved. But a lot of that probably has to do with what's come since, what's come between, and, you know, with the character kind of moving backwards in the Bloodshot Rising Spirit title in terms of development of the character. So that's kind of to be expected. Plus, I think the art on this Bloodshot series is more consistently good. And it just seems like the story is a little bit more fleshed out with a lot of the supporting characters and such. So we saw last time we were introduced to Bloodshot. We saw that he has these false memories. We got introduced to Dr. Kuratich, which he was the one that was sort of in charge of Bloodshot and the Bloodshot project at Project Rising Spirit. And then he left, and Kuratich was able to actually capture Bloodshot while he was on a mission to Afghanistan and basically unlock the mystery that was Bloodshot to himself. And now Bloodshot's aware that, hey, all these memories, all these lives that I've supposedly led, you know, whichever life they Project Rising Spirit needs to have me believe that I lived in order for me to accomplish whatever their next nefarious goals are, is the memories that they'll basically trigger and say, oh, I need to go rescue an old war friend. I need to save, you know, destroy a town or do this or do that or do whatever it is so that's going to help save my wife and child or whatever. And so at the end of that issue one, we saw Bloodshot blown to hell once again, I think for the third time in the issue, by Project Rising Spirit, just to get him back under control. And this issue starts off, we see Bloodshot experiencing more false memories, and we see that his kid somehow impaled. It's so ridiculous. He impales himself onto his white picket fence, which, you know, the kid trips and falls while playing football. He still wouldn't impale himself to the point of being dead on a white picket fence. They're not – these aren't like steel spikes, you know. It's a wooden fence. It just wouldn't happen. But it's all happening in Bloodshot's mind, obviously. And what we really see is that he's in some restricted airspace in a military aircraft 35,000 feet above Nebraska. And he's just woken up because of these memories. He's just experienced these traumatic experiences, despite the fact that he's been drugged by Project Rising Spirit. And he says to no one in particular, because again, he's living this imaginary scenario in his mind. He says, you're going to be all right. I'm just not going to anything happen to you. Just hang in there, buddy. Help is on the way. And when he says that, all the soldiers guarding him are like, it's waking up. And one soldier says to another, all right, you know what to do. And he's like, yes, sir. So basically they're going to shoot him in the head, which will then take time for the nanites to repair and will render him unconscious and hopefully incapable of causing them any harm. And so as the soldier pulls out his gun, Bloodshot is seeing his son, you know, one of these imaginary memories or fake memories, saying, Daddy, don't let him do it. You'll have to regenerate your brain tissue all over again. He sees his wife saying, he's right. Why are you just lying there and taking it? And Bloodshot's like, well, what am I supposed to do? I can't even move my arms. And the soldier, for whatever reason, hesitates. He's like, is he talking to us? Is he talking to himself? Like, And the commander says, "It doesn't matter, Sergeant. We just need him unconscious for this ride. Shoot him in the head now." But before he can, Bloodshot starts emitting this high-pitched scream, which incapacitates the soldiers. He's able to break out, and now it's too late. Like, even though the soldiers start firing, it's too late. Bloodshot's able to subdue the soldiers. And I will say that these action scenes are handled really well, especially the layouts. It's really clear what's happening in each and every of the panels, and it just makes for some really great action. And I hope that Tim Seeley and Brett Booth on their title look back at some of these early issues of Bloodshot to see the way to do it right, because this is done really, really well. And again, it's part of to mention something that Jesse mentioned when we were talking about the latest issue of Bloodshot Rising Spirit. It's part of the reason that even though this title is, you know, similar in concept to the Bloodshot Rising Spirit title, it's what makes this good and that below average is little things like this. Like, the art is great, not just in terms of line work and not just in terms of you know, how it looks on the page as far as it's rendered correctly, the anatomy's right and everything, but it's about storytelling. It's about being able to see the transitions from panel to panel, being able to tell what's going on, being able to show action and movement in a really high quality way. And I think that's part of the reason that this is good and that other stuff is lacking. So once Bloodshot subdues the soldiers that were guarding him, he sees more of his false memory families show up, and they're talking to him, and they're telling him, "You need to get out of this plane because the pilot's about to open the door and go for a headshot." And then that exact thing happens. Bloodshot literally rips the guy's arm off, and when he punches him into back into the cockpit, he rams into the other pilot, causes the plane to go down, and as it crashes with the big explosion, the scene shifts to an undisclosed location in Nevada. And this is basically Project Rising Spirit's headquarters, where they kind of run the Bloodshot program, and we see that a couple of the head bigwigs there, Mr. Dodge, who's in charge of running the Bloodshot program, is called on the carpet by his superior, Mr. Oryk, saying, "This is out of control. I want this situation handled immediately. Go to the nursery, retrieve the girl, finish this now." And Dodge is like, "Well, isn't that a bit extreme? You know, you heard Murphy, we're about to reestablish control." He's like, "I don't care. I want this threat neutralized. And as far as our traitorous former employee, Dr. Kuratich," and Dodge says, "Well, their base has been completely obliterated. Kuratich is still at large, but it's only a matter of time." And Oryk doesn't want to hear it. He says, I just want them both dead. You can't put toothpaste back in the tube," is how he phrases it. So meanwhile, in Nevada, we see Dr. Kuratich and his team, and they apparently are looking for the PRS research site that was created for the scientists and the families that were creating the Bloodshot, that were working on the project, I should say, the project of Bloodshot. And they see some footage and there's audio, and basically we see this situation where the nanites were growing out of control. We saw this as a possibility mentioned in issue 1 about the dangers of Bloodshot, and the fact that if the nanites got out of control, they would start growing and spreading and multiplying like this gray goo. And we see that Bloodshot was sent in to clean it up, and he was killing women and children, like these innocent people, because that's what Project Rising Spirit had programmed him to do, telling him that, there's this terrible outbreak, and it's a terrorist virus, and it's only a few miles from where your wife and child live. So you need to go there and wipe everybody out. It's the lesser of two evils. So pretty shitty thing to do to Bloodshot. But again, he's completely under the control of Project Rising Spirit. And as Dr. Kuratich is watching this footage, he says, "Oh, my dear blue-eyed boy, what did they make you do?" Meanwhile, back at the crash site, an ambulance shows up. They pull Bloodshot out. He's got a couple of hunks of metal stuck in his chest. He's already starting to regenerate, though, and as he regains consciousness, he says, "I need steak." And the female EMS who's in the ambulance, who's about to shock him with the defibrillator, is really, really surprised by that. Bloodshot says, "The Goldies are telling me they need protein. He basically needs protein to rebuild his body." And this EMT is saying, "You're going to need a lot more than that, but I you're lucky to be alive. You know, by some miracle, you were thrown from the wreckage." And she's about to give him a sedative when he uses his control over electronics to stop the vehicle. But unfortunately, it stops so quickly that the airbag knocks out the driver. And Bloodshot tells the female EMT, "Wait here, I'll be right back." It's Nebraska, so of course there's cows not far away. And even though it's not shown, we're led to believe Bloodshot went over there and had himself some steak. Very, very raw steak, obviously. And because when he shows back up, he's looks more like his normal self. So he says, "I need to drive," and hops in the ambulance with the female EMT. Meanwhile, back at the Project Rising Spirit headquarters, we see that Dodge is heading to the nursery for this girl that's he's very afraid to wake up, the one that Oryk basically ordered him to wake up. And it's a great choice here to make her look so dainty and feminine and small and petite, because clearly, based on the amount of chains and straitjackets and just the way she's locked up, that she must be really, really dangerous. So it's cool to kind of juxtapose that locked down person here with this idea that she's, you know, this Omega level threat. And one of the people guarding her even says, "Let me go on record as saying I think removing this girl from our facility is a reckless and foolish idea." And Dodge says, "You know what, I'll pass those sentiments along to Oryk." But meanwhile, pack her up, it's road trip time. And Bloodshot, "It was nice knowing you." So as the female EMT is driving the ambulance, Bloodshot's saying, I want to go home. But where that is, we don't have any idea. Because the EMT says, "Okay, don't kill me. I was only trying to help you." And Bloodshot says, "Well, if you take me where I need to go, there won't be a problem." So she says, "Where do you want to go?" And he just says, "Home." So again, where would that be? Where is home currently to him and his addled memories that have all been unlocked by Kurtich? We don't know. So all to be continued. But as I mentioned when I talked about the first issue, this idea of a one guy on the run so much reminded me of that classic Incredible Hulk TV show that it was part of the reason. It was like, I already liked Bloodshot from Valiant's first go-around. He was my favorite character. And then add in some aspects of one of my favorite TV shows of all time. And it's part of the reason that I liked this version of Bloodshot even more than the original. So, yeah, I thought it was great. And it was the hardest part about Bloodshot when he returned was honestly waiting from month to month, even more so than Exo or Harbinger. Bloodshot was the title that I just couldn't wait to read the next issue. What are your thoughts, Jesse?
You know, again, I really liked it. I remember reading it, and it was a magical time for me when the Valiant Universe came back online. And of all the titles, you know, I just each one I couldn't wait to have the next. I also like the idea that they explained his powers and grounded them in science a bit more. You know, they required that he have protein to regenerate, something that, you know, Wolverine never needed, you know, but when you scratch your head and stop and think about it, you're like, well, wait, is Wolverine magically making stuff appear out of, you know, thin air to sustain him? That doesn't make any sense, but it does make sense in Bloodshot. You know, it's a logical explanation. It's also one that I fear that the series here many years later is forgotten about, as he sprouts wings and flies away, you know? So there's that. There's a lot of characters being introduced, a lot of plot lines. Let's be honest here. PRS became one hell of a major player in the Valiant Universe. So, you know, from small things yield, entire worlds. I loved it. I did. I really did. And I still do. I also like the fact that even something as generic as, you know, that the generic soldiers in the plane aiming guns at his head. The captain, who, you know, is wearing a red ball cap, for reasons I'll never understand, pulls out a .38 revolver and aims it at him. Why does he have that? Well, I have no idea. Nobody carries that weapon out there. But regardless, he did. But what's cool is in the next page, they still have him holding it, you know. And so there's continuity there. There's consistency in there. So the artwork, you know, it's not like these guys were smoking joints and just drawing. I mean, they cared and they put their time and energy into it. And that is very much appreciated. So as a whole, yeah. No, I share your sentiments, man. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that goes back to, you know, paying attention to little details like that goes back to why this is so much better than what Bloodshot Rising Spirit is now. And it goes back to, and I think a lot of Valiant fans feel this way, a lot of, and why the kind of the DMG era, where they have room to improve, mistakes they've been making, it just doesn't feel like the universe and the stories are as connected as they used to be. So it starts small. It starts with continuity within a book, right? Like, contain continuity within a book, like making sure that the weapon is the same from one page to the next, making sure that, you know, clothing and all that kind of thing, you know, not seeing grammatical errors or typos and things like that. It starts small, but you pay attention to those little details like that, and it shows that you care about the properties, you care about the quality of the stories you're telling, and then you sort of scale that up, and you try to have all the stories matter. And unfortunately, lately, it hasn't felt like the Valiant universe. They've been telling some good stories. Not all of it has been good. I don't think that the level of quality from their worst book to their best book is as close as it used to be. I think there's a kind of a big range. There's some titles they're putting out which really haven't been very good, and some titles they're putting out that are very good. Back when this came out, I think everything was high quality. And I get it. They had more time to prep. They had more time to prepare. It was years and years in the making, as opposed to now with some of the things that have happened with DMG taking over and all the turnover with personnel and everything. And I get it. It's a hard thing to do. But if it's a hard thing to do to keep all the books connected continuity-wise, then I get that. But just start by making sure each book in and of itself has internal continuity for itself, for the story you're trying to tell, and then expand out from there. And, you know, maybe it's the next step after that is making sure that the stories that are currently being told don't contradict what's come before. Because that's, I mean, Valiant fans are hardcore, and we notice things like that. And I think one of the most glaring instances of that, you know, in recent memory was the Harbinger War II story with the way they treated Pete Stanchek. All of a sudden, you can just put this, like, metal blindfold on him, and his powers just disappear. It didn't make any sense. Well, why was he running along the ground trying to escape a helicopter rather than flying through the air at an incredible speed like we'd seen him do previously? Again, things like that, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, we're Valiant fans. We care about these characters. We're going to call you out on stuff like that. So when we go back and we read stuff like this and how high quality it was, it makes it tough to read some of the current stuff and to care and to keep wanting to support it, because like Jesse said, this was a magical time with these properties and these characters coming back. And, you know, at least we still have them. At least we can still go back and read these stories, and they're still enjoyable and they still stand up. So we'll be continuing probably to cover Bloodshot, this volume of Bloodshot, up until we get to Harbinger Wars 2. And then we may go Harbinger Wars 2, or we may jump back to Exo Manowar. Haven't decided on that yet. But it's a great time to go back and reread these. And I would even say, if somebody is really looking forward to the Bloodshot movie, rather than point them to the Lemire stuff, which may be kind of heady and tough for them to understand, rather than pointing them to Bloodshot Rising Spirit, which isn't as high quality as this, point them here. Point them to the first volume of the 2012 Bloodshot. Because you don't need to have any prior knowledge of who Bloodshot is to jump on this Dwayne Szczerzynski story and understand what's going on. And as far as the art by Lozy and Garcia, I think it's excellent. I like the differentiation between what is a memory and what is happening in current time. It really helps to let us know, you know, hey, clearly when you see these pages, they look so different. And normally I'm not a fan when there's two different art styles in a book that look so different. But here it works because, again, we're understanding that these more photorealistic pages are the flashbacks, are the false memories. So for me, it really works. But like I said earlier, the other thing that really works for me is the storytelling of the art, you know, beyond the anatomy and the line work and the rendering and all that. The storytelling in this issue from panel to panel, the transitions, the flow of the action is done so well. I'd forgotten how well it was done. But just having read Project Rising Spirit number 6 recently and then seeing this, and Project Rising Spirit was Rags Morales, so it was probably the best in terms of art that we had seen on that series. But like if you were to compare this issue to Project Rising Spirit number 5, Bloodshot Project Rising Spirit number 5, it's night and day. It really is. It just goes to show how much impact the art can have. It's not just a good story. It's got to have good visuals as well. That's the whole point of the comic book medium, right? It's story and art. One without the other, it just doesn't, it loses impact for sure. So I think that's all I have to say about this issue. Jesse, what do you have to add?
Yeah, I'll just throw in one little thing in there. The Lazzi art was pretty interesting in the flashbacks because it's very smooth. And digitally done, which is makes a lot of sense because the memories of Bloodshot has are also digital and they're programmed. So it's kind of almost like a false fake reality. And then when you look at the second artist, it's in reality, and it's more gritty and it's organic and it's hand done. So for me, it's an easy way to at least in this issue. To differentiate between, you know, what is going on in the mind and what is going on in the world.
Yeah, I completely agree with you 100%. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you guys all enjoyed this trip down memory lane. Like I said, we're going to continue to cover the first volume of Bloodshot. We'll probably cover the first two volumes and then either go back to EXO or cover the Harbinger Wars, the first Harbinger Wars series. So, as always, we want to thank you guys for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.